I think that so this will get in the weeds really quick for us. I don't know if our audience is as football knowledgeable as you and I, for that matter. I don't know if anyone is.
What'd you say?
I said I don't know how knowledgeable our audience is about football. Can't imagine.
Well, most of them live in Thailand and Taiwan, so I'd say probably not that knowledgeable.
Probably not that knowledgeable, unless they're stationed over there.
If they do know anything about football, I hope the one thing that they know about is Sean McDermott. I hope that's what they're aware of.
You big Sean McDermott guy?
Did you hear the story about how upset everyone was because he gave a locker room speech, and in the speech he was like, listen,
I so need, know where this is going already.
he goes, listen, we need to come together as a team. And then he goes, think about 9/11. And apparently the entire coaching staff was like, what? And he goes, think about 9/11 and how much teamwork that required. And people were like, okay, maybe he's going to talk about United 93. And he goes, no, think about those hijackers. Think about think about those 19 guys coming together, working together.
No, he didn't.
To 9/11. Yes, he did, dude. And he went on like a whole speech about how much like teamwork that took and how much effort that took for them to do 9/11.
Was like, which, Ilhan Omar visiting that day in the locker room?
I don't know. What? It's such a crazy thing to say in a football team that plays in New York. To be like, yeah, so 9/11, that's the type of teamwork I'm looking for.
Okay, that is the weirdest thing I'll hear today.
Okay, all right, but, all right. I think there might be, because to give the devil his due, that is pretty good example of teamwork. I mean, those 19 little dudes, they sure did use a lot of teamwork to do 9/11.
First of all, if you subscribe to Alex Jones' theory, those were just holograms. So,
okay, I don't think they were holograms.
And a dead in the water there. And then if you go further,
it would have been funny if he was like, not only do we need teamwork, but we also need Dick Cheney. We need to hire Dick Cheney as our GM, and he's going to help us. He's going to help us do this.
Do you think that I always wonder, like, how come United 93 there was resistance, but the other ones, they kind of, do you think they just passively accepted it, or what do you think was going on?
All right. This is something that never made any sense to me, and I'm not like a conspiracy person on 9/11. Sure, I mean, I've read all the conspiracies and I've watched all the conspiracies, and there was a long time in my life where I believed them. I think most of the conspiracies probably came after 9/11. Like, once it happened, I think there's way more interesting conspiracies after it. But the official story is that the people on United 93, the reason they knew is because they already had heard about the other attacks and they started putting it together on the plane. But I don't understand how they found out about it. Like, I don't understand how they were able to use cell phones on the plane.
Well, like,
we couldn't use cell phones today.
But remember,
they had
plane phones. Remember, they had the little plane phones you could make like a paid call out.
Maybe that's what they were doing.
Yeah, that's for sure what they were doing.
I guess it's because it was the last one, so people started putting it together. Like, oh yeah, the two planes hit the towers.
I don't think the order has anything to do with it as much as like, I think it. Because really all you need to stop it, you just need like three guys that are taller than 5'9" to be like, hey, we're going to let this ride. And then one of them be like, nah. And then the other two be like, okay, let's go. And you can kind of shut it down.
So what you're saying is the reason that that happened is because Mark Wahlberg was on Flight United 93.
He's not in that. Is he in that movie too?
It's not a movie. In real life, Mark Wahlberg was on Flight 93. That was a documentary. That was not a movie. Wahlberg
that's the
was
thing
on
I don't get
Flight
about,
93.
About plane crashes, like they say that Travis Barker and his homeboy, they crash on a plane, and his homie dies like a few days later, but Travis lives pretty much.
Yeah, apparently you can survive them. Like, how the fuck does that work?
I've seen what commercial airliners crashed look like. It's like it looks like a kid took a Lego plane and threw it at the wall as hard as he could. There's not like any opportunity to survive.
I think it's like, I think it's those little seatbelts. I think those seatbelts.
Oh, yeah.
I think the seatbelts help you survive.
There's nothing that makes me more irate.
Well, okay, let's review. I know of two plane crashes. I know of Flight 93, and then I know of the one where Mark Wahlberg helped crash the plane in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And then I know of
Liam Neeson in The Gray.
I was going to say Brad Pitt in World War Z.
Yeah, good one,
when
too.
When the zombies took over.
Also, Flight of the Phoenix. Flight of the Phoenix, I feel like a real niche movie for you and I. You ever seen that?
Well, I like World War Z because it's a true story, and I like Flight United 3 because it's a true story.
Have you seen Flight of the Phoenix?
No.
They crash in the desert, and they somehow, again, survive. I don't fucking understand how. But
oh, is that the World War II movie where like then they're like in the, they have to fight Saudi Arabia or some shit?
No. The guy, though, that is among the crashees says, I am an airplane mechanic builder man, and I can build the plane. And then
they rebuild the plane?
We can fix it and fly. And then it is revealed later on in the story that he actually is just like really into building like remote control planes with his son. And everybody loses their mind. They're like, you're fucking told us you're an airplane. And he's like, I technically am an airplane mechanic. It's like one of the most amazing unintentional comedies of all time.
No, that's what I call autism volume 6. Yeah. It's just an autistic guy on an airplane being like, I could probably fix this.
Yeah, yeah. How much time do I have?
Yeah, how different could it be? I mean, how different could it be? That's fucking awesome. I haven't seen that. I do love that.
I wouldn't even, if you did that and you kept everyone's hopes up, everyone else would be mad at you. I don't think I'd be mad at you.
No, I think that you need that guy. You need like a guy with like unbridled optimism.
Thanks for keeping us alive. Like, without that, what are we going to do? We're just going to.
We have no chance. Yeah, we're going to walk in the desert.
We're going to wallow.
Yeah.
Which is a word I really like.
You're gonna wallow in the muck and the mire. That was fucking airplanes. What were we saying about airplanes?
United
Flight World War Z.
Flight 90.
Oh, Shanksville. Have you ever been to the Shanksville Monument in Pennsylvania when we would drive by it in school?
Isn't it just like a trailer with a dude like charging tickets?
It is. Yeah, it's just a guy outside running like a taco stand.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, man, you can go walk around the field, but it's going to cost you $5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, my favorite part about Shanksville is right outside of the Shanksville, there used to be this giant billboard, and it had an airplane looking like it was about to crash. And then in front of the airplane was Jesus with his arms spread out. And then it said underneath, it was like, America aborts, like, I don't know what it is, like 3 million.
But I'm fine with that.
What? Fine with what?
Them leveraging tragedy into more tragedy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically for the viewer, what was happening was it was a picture of Jesus basically flying the airplane himself, like his arms spread open like he was on the cross, if you're listening to this in audio, and his arms were the planes of the airplane. And then it was basically like, yeah, Jesus did this because of abortion. Jesus let this happen to us because of abortion.
Reproductive justice.
Yeah, which implies that somehow the 9/11 hijackers were in cahoots. They were in cahoots with Jesus to carry out the 9/11 massacre as some sort of justice for abortion in America.
Speaking of, I was listening to this guy the other day make a case for why Christ is the one true prophet, son of God, whatever you want to call him, because every other religion acknowledges JC.
Is that true? Do the Jews acknowledge JC?
The Hindus, the
Hindus do not acknowledge JC.
Dude, apparently the way it goes is when Jesus is a young boy, he goes missing for several years, it's because he was going and learning Eastern philosophy.
And then he
circles back around. He goes, gets all the ancient mysteries out of Egypt. He gets them out of China. And he comes back down through Egypt, and he learns the Egyptian philosophies, and then he comes back to his people in Judea.
That is all this wisdom. That is not Hindu doctrine. That is a movie. I know exactly what movie clip. I saw that on YouTube Shorts as well. That is a movie clip. I knew it. As soon as you started laughing, I know exactly what movie you got that from.
The point is like they all acknowledge him. They all acknowledge him as...
No, they don't.
Got
that from like the Da Vinci Code 4. I know exactly where that comes from.
There is a scene in Angels and Demons with Tom Hanks that reminisces of this quite a bit, but that's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and the guy's basically like, yeah, so then maybe maybe Jesus learned how to slow his heart rate. He went out to the Eastern mythologies and he went and learned in a temple, and he's like basically describing how he is Jesus and how he learned how to like slow his breathing and how he's not actually the Son of God, he's just really good at meditation, and how he faked his own death on the cross.
And you're telling me you don't
No, I mean, hey, I'm not saying true, I'm just saying that is not Hindu doctrine.
First of all, you took it to crazy town. That's not what I was saying. Okay, what I was saying is every other religion acknowledges that he was a real guy.
Yeah, but you're making that part up from the movie Angels and Demons with
No, that's not the source. That's not the source. The source is Billy Carson, but that's fine. But which
Dr. Billy Carson,
shaky legs even then, but the point is like
I fucking love that guy.
He's a genius. He's a Miami born and raised guy.
Of course he is, dude. I you know what, I wish you would have said, where do you think he was born, because I know that I would have gotten that right based only on his previous book title, which was Go Woke and Don't Go Broke.
Yeah,
which is a play on the words of woke. And basically say, I mean, it is
but
the dumbest interpretation of that. Yeah, is it? Is it done bad?
It's like a Planet of the Apes of the Planet of the Apes of the Planet of the Apes. That's the title of the movie.
There's this guy, Billy Carson, who is like an ancient Egyptologist astronaut theorist.
Look, I just want you to, before you begin, okay, you're on thin ice, okay? Don't fucking drag Billy's name down the muck. Okay.
Tell me where I go wrong.
Okay,
tell me where I go wrong.
Go ahead.
Eddie, I won't even touch his ancient Egypt theories about how there's 2 kilometer wide pyramids in Antarctica, and how if you go to the center of Antarctica, there's actually a rainforest. I'm not even gonna go into that part, which by the way I Googled, not true. that took me about 3 minutes to check out to see if he was making that shit up. Turns out, yes, he was.
Antarctica's tough. Antarctica's tough to defend.
He also said, he also had this fucking hilarious point where he was like, you can't even go to Antarctica. And then literally it was as if the universe wanted to like real quick give me a little nugget, because like 3 hours later I was on a call with a coworker and he was like, yeah, I just got back from Antarctica, and he showed me like this entire, like he had an entire like slide point of
him. He means it's hard to go. He doesn't mean you can't, he just means, you know, they're not doing Disney World down there. It's
Oh, they absolutely are. You can go and see the penguins. You can go walk around. I was like, hey, did you see any pyramids? He was like, no, there's no pyramids.
Well, they're in the interior. They're in the interior, and you stay on the coast the whole time.
Right. Uh-huh.
Also, why does every country on Earth have an agreement to not take any land or have any permanent structure in Antarctica?
I think that's probably just like a good call.
Why? You don't feel that way about Greenland.
Well, isn't the North Pole kind of have the same rules?
No, that's fair game. It's just Antarctica.
North Pole, you can fight over.
North Pole is much, much, much smaller and much icier. There's a whole landmass beneath the ice and snow in Antarctica. There is.
I think the reason that people don't let you build bases on Antarctica, even though they build like small little military outposts, I think it's because they know that would become like a hotspot for trying to take over that land. Because from Antarctica, you can like attack anywhere in South America, anywhere
it's
in Africa.
Really, it's much closer to South America and Australia than people realize.
Yeah, it's like 30 feet away. You could swim there.
The tip of South America is real close.
Yeah, you fly into Buenos Aires and then you take like a 12-hour boat ride and you're in Antarctica.
Well, the Antarctica thing that I subscribe to actually is that it's the Garden of Eden. It's
Antarctica is the Garden of Eden?
Correct, yeah.
There's no fucking snakes in Antarctica.
Well, there's nothing there now, and it's covered in ice, but there's four rivers that come out of the Garden of Eden in a cross fashion. There is the same thing in Antarctica under the ice. Again,
I'm not going to do this because I did this with the last Billy Carson episode. I watched 3 hours of Billy Carson, and every time he said something, I would Google it, and it would take me about 2 minutes to find, 30 things that this is not true. And I'm like, God damn it. Every single thing he says, here's all you need to know about Billy Carson. If you're sitting at home, go ahead. Tell me about Billy Carson.
It becomes clear. So like the style.
I don't want to yuck your yum.
You got to keep in mind, it's not just him. Like I would say Alex Jones does this. Rush Limbaugh did this. Like the style of these guys is, They overwhelm you with so much stuff.
Bullshit. So much bullshit that you can't possibly check it all out.
It's like you're in there boxing with a dude with a really active hand and you're just got this jab fucking popping in the face and then a right hand comes and you're like, holy shit, is that real? But you've already forgotten about all the jabs you've taken to the fucking chops. And by the end of the conversation, you're just soaked in blood and swollen to shit.
And you have brain damage.
And you're like, this is all real.
Because I think that's a great metaphor, because the way that your brain feels after you get in a boxing match. Yeah. The way that your brain feels after you get in a boxing match with a really active jab is probably the same way you feel after listening to Billy Carson talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your head hurts. You don't know where you are. You need a stool to sit down. There's somebody in a corner screaming at you.
Yeah, me. Yeah, in that case, I'm the guy in the corner screaming.
Yeah, you're my Teddy Atlas. Just like, we're firefighters.
Yeah.
We're firefighters.
That's my favorite.
We're at home in the fire. We're going back into the fire.
Whenever I see, first of all, I feel like it's so, romanticized, like fighting and whatnot, that like when you have like a sense of what's actually going on and you see some corner man, like you watch Trevor Whitman and he's like, all right, be calm. Like we're working on, remember what we did in the gym? Like we throw that 3-4 like that and step out of the pot. Like he's like very calm and talking about what's actually happening. A lot like when you go to the sidelines during football and you kind of readjust to what the defense is doing or the offense is doing. And like a comment like, this is what they're doing, this is what we're seeing, da, da, da. And then you have some of these guys like Teddy Atlas they're just like, are you a Power Ranger or not? Are you a Power Ranger or not? And the guy's like, what the fuck's going on? Like,
it's time to go Gundam style.
That's my favorite.
Turn it to a Gundam right now. Yeah.
It's so good. We're firemen. Yeah. We're firefighters.
The guy's just sitting there like, I've never fought a fire in my life. What are you talking about? We didn't train for that at all. I have to do firefighting techniques?
And the guy's like, Teddy, I can't get him off me.
Where's my fucking hose? Yeah, I think you need that guy sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
Speaking of firefighters, I was talking to this dude at the gym that I do jiu-jitsu with, who's also a firefighter, and he was telling me they have like this little training facility, and you can go there and you can do all the firefighter drills. And he's like, yeah, and at the end of it, we shoot you with a fire hose. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, it's awesome. You get like shot like 30 feet across the room.
Yeah.
And I was like, that sounds insane. But that made me think, and all right, don't get mad at me here. All right. Don't get mad at me. Don't you think that there was at least a couple people during the civil rights marches?
Oh my God.
Who were firefighters, right? And like politically, they're like, I agree with the civil rights marchers. I agree with them. I'm with them. I support their cause. But they do have to do their job and use the don't you think there was at least a couple of them who were a little conflicted, like, man, this is pretty sweet. And you just like just launched some dude like 30 yards.
The only thing I'll agree with you on, it's definitely more satisfying than any of the alternative methods. Because you get some real, I mean, it's like
you'd have to have a God complex.
You ever seen Jackass where they like stand in front or behind of the airplane engine and they turn it on and it fucking
yeah, shoots them across.
You're doing that and like and you're getting paid.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably something about, and you're with your friends.
You're with your buddies.
You're probably drinking beer in there. I mean,
and morally you're conflicted. I know that morally you would be conflicted, but a small part of you has got to be like, this is pretty tight. This is pretty cool. And you just fucking.
I mean, do you think I've seen some, especially in France, where like the protests.
Yeah. Let's take the race element out of it. Let's move it to a country without races.
In France, when the protests are going on, I remember seeing some videos, though, where there are some dudes in riot gear who are like, you can tell are kind of doing their job and holding the line. And then there are some dudes in riot gear who are. They're having fun.
Yeah, there's sociopaths that happen to pick the exact right job for them.
This one video that always sticks out of my mind is it's a dude full riot gear, full blacked out riot gear. His helmet on, he's got a shield in one hand, and he's got one of those tear gas launchers in the other hand. And guy's throwing shit at him, and he like hops the little barricade, and then he's like trying to get in his face, and the dude turns and looks at him, boom, and just thumps him
with
a tear gas from 2 feet away, right in the chest. The dude collapses to the ground. The guy doesn't even break stride. He like total Call of Duty video gamed him, and then like just keeps walking. See that guy, like you could have just checked that dude with the shield. You could have even punch that guy in the face, fine. You thumped him right there. So now he's going to be rolling around on the ground like fucked up. And then the gas is going to start releasing right where he's laying.
All over him, like, and he can't move because you just collapsed his sternum in the middle of Paris.
And I can feel that the way that he walked away from it, that guy will never think about that again. That guy won't even... That won't even pop. That guy could drink ayahuasca in the jungle and reflect on his whole life.
He was like, that was right over cool.
That
part.
That wouldn't, that wouldn't even register.
Yeah, he probably tells his like grandkids about that. Like, dude, all this one time.
Yeah.
I
noob tubed this dude right in the chest.
Yeah. Just,
he thought he was going to French drop kick me or something. And I. And you know what I mean?
He thought he was going to do something French to me.
From our previous episode, that makes me feel like that was a fucking Hungarian dude in the French Foreign Legion who, like, had, you know, fought too many people on the street. Like, that's definitely.
Good point. There is probably a lot of dudes in the French Foreign Legion who are just bad hombres.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That should not be allowed to do stuff like that. I don't understand the French Foreign Legion. I don't understand how you can just be a criminal and then go to France and they'll just use your criminality to fuck up other places.
They give you a passport and a new identity and the rest of the world is like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're American, like that revokes your American citizenship, but they give you a fake identity. So you can't even get caught.
It's a reset and America lets whoever in. So like, you could definitely come to America afterwards and just be Jacques instead of John.
Yeah.
Pretty chill.
Yeah. Let's not get into immigration. I think last episode we got a little bit too much having fun with the voice. And I just want to let everybody know that this is a pro-Israel podcast. We're we were making fun of progressives. We were actually pro-Israel.
Israel kind of makes it hard to be pro-Israel sometimes.
They make it impossible. They make it like, so hard.
Guys, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you just knock it off?
Yeah. Like, and you know what? I saw this video. I sent it to you today too. It's such bad optics. All of our leaders, like, they go there and they like get on a knee and like cry and touch that wall and stuff.
Yeah.
Feels like, and then like, that's the same place we send like, you know, billions of dollars every time there's conflict. And it's like this weird, like,
I mean, they're not even trying to miss people over there. They're like,
it feels spiritual. It feels more like less strategic and like, we want a foothold at the gate of the Middle East to kind of influence the area. It feels less that and more like like they're being animated by the spirit of
the Crusades,
something not human. Also,
yeah, yeah.
And that's what freaks me out.
Okay, well, let's not do lizard people. The Jews are lizard
people.
Let's not do lizard things. I know what you're doing, and I just want to say, knock that off. But there is a weird thing. Like we've talked about it a bunch, but the fact that like the pro-Israel lobby in America is primarily dominated by dudes who genuinely believe that the end of the world is going to start in Bethlehem, and they're trying to bring about a nuclear holocaust. Like big tent Seventh Day Adventist psycho Christians in America are donating billions of dollars to Israel so that there will be a nuclear holocaust. That's fucking insane.
Yeah.
That is our two
it's like
choices.
How we always like analogize like a world conflict to like a bar. It really is like you're pushing an armed to the teeth person in the group with like Napoleon complex to fight the biggest guy or one of the biggest guys in the bar who's kind of not really. Well, that's the other thing too. Like, oh man, the analogy doesn't work just because of this. Like, a reason why it's easy to side with Israel too is because a lot of these like super anti-Muslim communities, or not super anti-Jewish communities in the Muslim community, you get the sense that they hate Jews more than they kind of love their own sometimes.
Dude, I was just gonna say.
Spiritual animus thing I'm talking about.
Our choice is between these Seventh Day Adventists in America who are trying to bring about a nuclear holocaust and the exact same side of the coin. Essentially, like you looked at that video you sent me of the dudes in Yemen who were like in the streets, like a million people screaming, like, we don't care if we die. Death to the Jews. It's like, okay, well, you guys are just the Seventh Day Adventists of Islam.
Yeah, like, it's like there's nowhere to go. You're not off ramp in any.
No, you can't off ramp it. Yeah,
but it's like it just feels like the spirit that animates all of it there is I don't know. It does feel biblical and weird. Whereas like in Ukraine and Russia, like that conflict, to me that feels much more Big Brother, Little Brother. And
there's a little of the spiritual element to that one where people will talk about Russia as if it's this giant Satan, like the America. There's politicians in America. Yeah, but we know it's not because we know it makes perfect sense that they would not want Ukraine to join NATO. But like the way that the American media is pitching it is that Russia is like this giant world consuming bear that will like kill everyone. And then Russia on their end is like, America is actually giant pedophile Satan country.
Well, the thing with Russia that makes them gives them little ground to stand on is like the kulaks and what Stalin did and like all of the people that died because of social planning essentially.
But they got this little thing they get to do where they're like, we're not actually the Soviet Union anymore.
Kind of, yeah.
It's like, yeah, but you guys are the same people.
Your guy that runs the shows from the KGB, though. You're aware of that, right? Like,
and he's like, yes, but I am no longer in KGB. We no longer have KGB.
Yeah, it's a little weird. But like,
I do like that their propaganda over there is literally just that America is actually all pedophiles. Like, our entire country is pedophile demons. And they have to like put a stop to it. That's probably the funniest propaganda of the 21st century. And they're not that far off.
It becomes more true every day.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It makes you go like, man, well, let's hear what Russia's got to say.
It does. The weird thing, too, is like, that's why I feel like the right in America throughout this has been like accused repeatedly of like, they're puppets of Putin and they're da da da. Da. And that's because like every once in a while there'll be this cross section between conservative America and Russian policy where it's like, yeah, maybe two bathrooms. And then like,
yeah. Because Russia's very like, traditionally
Putin told them to say that for sure. No. Yeah. Maybe just two bathrooms.
It's the all-time funniest thing because like I genuinely, I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but there was like a moment where Democrats realized they had this amazing tool, which was to call all Republicans racist, which is like one of the worst things that you can call somebody in today's society. And so they had this Trump card, not to be too literal, but like they had this Trump, no pun intended. They had this Trump card where every time a Republican said anything, they'd be like, yeah, well, you're a racist. And everyone was like, ooh, and you think they won the fight, but then suddenly some genius and the GOP, probably Steve Bannon, some Machiavellian genius was like, oh yeah, we're all racist? Well, you're all pedophiles, okay? Every single one of you wants to fuck kids. And the Democrats, instead of being like, we're not pedophiles, went, yeah, well, how old is the kid?
Yeah, I know.
They're like, well, what is a pedophile?
And it's really like, oh, exposed themselves there.
Yeah, oh no. Just like, say you're not. Don't be like, well, let's see the kid.
You fast forward a few years, and now the term like minor attracted person exists.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
exactly.
Like, guys.
The correct answer was no, we're not. Not.
Yeah. Well, don't air the kid. Don't air the dirty laundry. That's not how you win. But I mean, my favorite propaganda point that the Russians use is that, and this is like kind of based in history, is that the Ukrainians are all Nazis, which I like because that's like
that.
Other than South America, that's like where they are. And then Canada fucking brings a Ukrainian general who's literally a former Nazi, and they all standing over him because Justin Trudeau has like the most cursory sense of history that's ever existed in a world leader.
Yeah, so, he goes, they stood against the Russians. Like, on the live broadcast, he gets up in front of a bunch of people and says, this courageous man stood against the Russians. And everyone clapped. And not one person went, wait a minute, who was fighting the Russians in World War II?
Did we vet this guy at all? Like, where do we get him?
Dude, he had, this is the craziest thing I heard about that guy. He had a blog up until like 2014.
That's what I'm saying. It wouldn't be hard to figure it out. Like,
all you have to do is Google that guy. An 80-year-old man, how he even has a blog, I don't know. I mean, his grandkid had to be updating
this.
That's
the hate in there. That's the hate.
Yeah, he hated.
They don't learn technology to spew more hate, for sure.
Nazis hated. That actually is the internet, is that the Nazis hated the Jews so much that they figured out the internet so they could continue to be anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
And that's this guy. He like literally was 90 years old and figured out how to use a blog so that he could post like anti-Semitic blog posts. It's the wrong time to piss. Now I look like I'm just ranting about the Nazis. I'll cut that.
Yeah. It's like, well, they just want everyone to have the, you remember in, summer camp when you did the color wars and you do blue versus red and you do all sorts of games and
we always did white versus black in my school.
That doesn't surprise me actually, but that's how they want people to view the political sphere. That's how they want global relations to be viewed. That's how they want all that to be. And it's like it actually works so well because people aren't interested in the history, which is I think why we're immune to a lot of it, because it's like, well, you're telling a child's depiction of how we got here, and you're leaving out all of the lead up. Like,
Yeah, you're just starting at second wave consequences every time. You're just starting at like the second level, third level in, and you missed all of the other points. It's like, I mean, but that is why people like Patrick Bet David are so popular, is because he can just, you don't actually have to know anything. You can kind of just sit there and let him talk at you.
Yeah.
Dude, I was listening to a Patrick Bet David episode, and I know he's your favorite guy in the world, but he had a guy on talking about gun violence, and the guy just goes, bro, like, I don't fucking understand it. Like, I live in a neighborhood where there is no gun violence, okay? Like, there is no gun violence because we got a gated community. And you know why, bro? Because I'm out there hitting the sales. Like, if you don't want gun violence, what you need to do is sell. You need, like I sold so many, like, house insurance, home mortgages that, like, I don't have to live where there's gun violence anymore.
I know, dude. You don't think I know?
That was his solution to gun violence, was that you needed to sell insurance.
I know, okay? It's not, this is the thing, okay? The podcast is for a he's casting a wide net, all right? He's trying to catch even the Vince Youngs of the world, you know?
Easy.
Well, that's not what
it sounds.
You get some context.
Listen, I know what you meant. I know what you meant, but what you just said sounded crazy.
Vince Young was the quarterback in the NFL. He has the lowest Wonderlic score of all time, which, if you correspond it, he had like an 81 IQ.
Yeah, he was learning disabled.
No one in the military can even be in the military if they have below an 85 IQ. So
it's what we used to call mentally.
he's making content for those folks all the way up to, you know, I guess me, I probably got an 86 IQ. So there's
not a very big scale.
So, but that's most of the population. So, yeah. I mean, I think, that's why, and sometimes he has good stuff. By sometimes, I mean, rarely he has good stuff.
What you need to understand about Joe Biden, Biden is not about the American people. Only Trump is about American people.
He also talks like he'll be like, and the reason I say that is the following. And then he'll say,
and the reason that I say that is the following.
He
speaks like he's Native American. I don't understand how he has like this weird Native American dialect where like he talks and he's just like, bro, what you need to understand is
he's Assyrian.
We don't use the term Assyrian anymore. We haven't used the term Assyrian in 3,000 years, Jake. I mean, that you literally just turned into an 18th century British biologist. That term has not been used. Assyrian? Nobody said Assyrian about a person or a group of people in literally four millennia.
He literally takes a chariot with Arabian horses.
Yeah, he's a horse archer. A chariot archer from the Assyrian Empire.
He's raising fine silks.
Yeah.
And Kuri from the Indian.
What's funny is, I think you're like technically right. I think he's from like the Eastern Iran, which is like part of the Persian Empire that was dominated by the Assyrians and Babylonians. Yeah, I think technically you are right, but I just have not heard that.
You don't think I know?
7,000 years.
That's how I classify where people are from the ancient heritage of the land that they claim to be.
Yeah,
from.
Yeah, yeah.
I still call people Nordic.
Yeah, yeah. Or Tartars. Like anytime somebody's like, I'm like, Turkish, I'm
you
like,
know
you're
what
a Tartar.
Out the window, you can't say anymore is Oriental.
I actually don't understand that one. I actually don't. I mean, that I think it's a cool term. I think
Oriental?
It's cool to come from the Orient. I mean, the Orient is cool.
I think it's funny because all the white people that said that, they never pronounced it. They never said Oriental like it's supposed to.
Oriental.
It's Oriental.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which makes it feel like they thought felt, they wouldn't even know what the word was.
You can't call people Orientals, but I think you should be able to still refer to the region as the Orient.
Let me see if I have to get out of this meeting.
Yeah, see if you can cancel it. We're having a good one.
Every guy you draft in his prime. It was three of us. We went in a circle. Two guys I didn't really know. One of the guys picks Marshall Faulk and Marvin Harrison in his all-time guys. So you have to pick 11 stars on both sides of the ball. He took – those were, I think, his third and fourth pick.
I kind of like that. Marshall Faulk, one of the best possible scat backs around.
You're telling me you're taking – he's even the seventh running back, the eighth running back?
Oh, he's top five for sure. Running backs, top five for sure.
That you're drafting.
He had, like, multiple 2,000-yard seasons. All purpose.
Okay, so we'll just do recency bias right at the bat. You want Marshall Faulk or McCaffrey?
Yeah, I think there's probably a pretty good argument. They're probably as close. Pretty same same. If McCaffrey could stay healthy, then I'll take.
You want Marshall Faulk or LaDainian Tomlinson?
I don't know about LT out of the backfield catching the ball. Kind of depends on the offense I'm running. Am I doing zone read? Like, what am I running? You know, if I'm lining up and I need to run the ball, I'm taking LT.
Well, you're drafting. Keep in mind, this is your team, so you know the offense you're going to run, defense you're going to run going in. So you draft accordingly with the style that you'd play. I don't think that you would take Faulk.
Yeah, because I'm going to run the ball a lot.
Marvin Harrison?
Yeah, I mean, Marvin Harrison's a top 10 receiver. Not physically, but you're talking about a guy who's always open. I mean, Marvin Harrison's got 150 touchdowns. I'm taking him pretty high up there.
Want to hear my first picks?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mine were Sean Taylor.
Okay.
Larry Allen.
Okay. Yeah.
Trent Williams.
Yeah. So we're going to run the ball and we're going to knock people's fucking shoes off their body.
Trent Williams, Reggie White, and Randy Moss.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely taking Randy Moss over Marvin Harrison.
Probably taking Gronk up there pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team that's going to run the ball. And then when you try to run the ball, I'm going to have a guy run down and turn himself into a human spear and go right through your chest.
I just Googled it. So they have – see, I hate this, though. They have Jim Brown, Walter Payton, and Gale Sayers as the top three running backs of all time.
Yeah, the only person I would say yes to is Walter Payton.
I'm tackling Gale Sayers in open field 100%.
I don't know about that. Gale Sayers was really good at football, but – I will say that Jim Brown is a pretty hard person to judge as far as evaluating talent because he was playing against guys who were on their lunch break from
1957 to 1965.
These aren't even professional football players. These are literally professional longshoremen.
Like on cigarette breaks.
Yeah, who are on their cigarette break and they come over like, yeah, I'll fucking tackle him. Come here, you little bastard.
Yeah. He's wearing a one-bar helmet playing running back.
Instead of little bastard, they probably said something much more racially based.
By the way, a one-bar helmet in football where bar can very easily fit in that top deck.
Brett Favre was wearing that in the 90s.
Brett Favre, my favorite Brett Favre thing is – and he passes it on to Aaron, too. He took his – I don't know if Aaron does it as much. Brett took his chin strap off every play.
Yeah, Aaron does it every play, and he snaps it right here. They do the same thing. They got the leather chin strap. That's the one thing where it makes me question whether or not Jordan Love's going to be good. He should have gone with the leather chin strap. You got to get the leather chin strap to continue the cycle. All right? That is a cycle that reaches back into 1989. to have Packers quarterbacks with the leather chin strap from 1989 to 2000. What? I mean, he's going to play until 2030.
So he's older than us, or we're older than him, obviously. But like, I can remember 65s, 75s, 85s, 95s as a young boy having a leather chin strap.
Yeah. Yep.
But then around middle school, they
got put the little padded one. Plastic. I remember getting the padded one and being like, oh shit, dude, this is pretty cool.
And it fit your chin and like jaw so well, it made your head feel like you had a weapon on you.
You were locked in. Yeah. You could take your head and just fucking smash somebody else's brains in.
So they have LaDainian here as the first modern running back at number five behind Bo Jackson.
I'll take that. Yeah, Bo's a real what could have been. I'm not taking Bo anywhere. Eric Dickerson,
which I like Eric Dickerson a lot.
Yeah, I love this game. I mean, you could just watch people and know that they would translate. Yeah. But I was watching a movie from the 90s with we went skiing and Dave and Serena and Zobert, and I was like insistent that we play this movie called Luck of the Irish. Which was a Disney Channel movie. Dude, his best friend in the movie, if you haven't seen it, his best friend is black, and he's being turned into a leprechaun by an evil Irish clan. Not like
yeah, I love that movie.
Clan, but like an evil Irish clan who steals his luck. And at one point, the grandfather, who's quickly being turned into a leprechaun, says to they're all sitting around, and he's talking about how terrible the Irish goes, and he goes, well, yeah, can you even remember what was happening to us when we first got to this great country? We had to work the worst jobs in the world, minimum wage jobs, for hardly any pay. And the black kid goes, yeah, well, at least you guys got paid. And I was like, holy shit, dude. This is a 1998 Disney movie. And the black kid goes, yeah, at least you got paid. I was like, oh my God, dude. It rules.
It's so much healthier, though, than how they do it today.
So much healthier than any Disney woke movie now. That version of woke made perfect. Like, that is a conversation I've had on a job site. Like, I mean, that is a real conversation. That was so awesome. I was like, fuck yeah, dude. That made me love
this
country.
What is the advantage for them to get away from like authentic, real human interaction?
I don't think there's an advantage. I think that they haven't had any. I think what happened was there was a shift in the writers' rooms, and there was a shift in Hollywood and in newspapers, because I've read about this. It started happening in the 80s, where you started getting, like, one, from nepotism, but two, because of the way that the job worked, where you have to start off as a very poor reporter, but you still had to live in a major city like L.A. or New York. The only people who could afford to be writers were people whose parents were paying for them to live in an apartment in New York or Los Angeles. And so you stopped having anyone who had any association with the working class. And so you get all of these kids from Harvard and Yale, and they've literally never had the conversation that we just talked about in Luck of the Irish.
They don't even know anyone who's had the conversation.
They don't know how those people talk. So you can't even be somebody who you don't know that that's how people in the real world talk. So you've never heard that sentence before. Meanwhile, I've literally heard my dad have that conversation with his best friend who is a black plumber. I've literally heard my dad be like, well, the Irish barely got paid. And his black plumber go, yeah, at least you got paid. And it was,
it's all like assumption
based. The funniest thing ever. Yeah. And so they're trying to mimic a conversation that they think would happen. And they've never even been around that conversation. So they can't actually recreate it.
Yeah. It's sad. It's
because what happened was local newspapers died, right, because of the internet. And so all the local newspapers lost all their funding and got killed out because they couldn't sell advertising anymore. And so you couldn't be somebody who started at a local newspaper in Sioux Falls, North Dakota, or wherever the fuck Sioux Falls is, and start to work on your craft from the age of 21 to 28, so that by the time you moved to New York, you were an actual writer, or to LA, you were an actual writer who could pay, who would be hired as a staff writer instead of as an intern, right? So you could actually pay for yourself. So you could come from a working.
It was a real career.
It was an actual career instead of this thing that like rich people go into so that their kid's not a failure.
So like, I know you have a tough time with this guy, but he's just he's the shit. I was listening to Bo Burnham this weekend talk about social media, and what he's saying kind of goes in line with this, how social media has flattened the human experience. So like if you were a guy in Sioux Falls, like you had Sioh Falls experiences.
Get the fuck out of here. We said that on the podcast 5 years ago. This is not Bo Burnham. This was me.
We know this, but like he was doing it very eloquently, but basically the flattening of the human experience has resulted in the kind of weird assumption shit that you're talking about, where people are just basically like, it's like that gray NPC meme thing where like everybody is this same thing because the human experience has been so flattened.
Yeah, because your like, dad, nobody has a dad who owned a hardware store anymore because there are no local hardware stores. It's all Walmart. So
nobody has a dad with a cock anymore, let alone owned a hardware store.
Yeah, I mean, you could grow up in South Riding, Virginia, and you had the exact same experiences as somebody who grew out 10 miles outside of Oklahoma City, because you both had an Applebee's, you both had a
Walmart.
But
now those people have the same experience as the people that live in Chicago, as the people that live in Atlanta, as the people that live in, or at least exposure wise because of social media. So you have this like, there's no nuance in like novelty, because everything is Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's dating life.
Right. Oh, because and even all the slang starts to become ubiquitous. So you get a term like what do they used to call
Riz.
Yeah, like Riz, or like I remember they used to call thoughts in DC, like the idea of a thought. Kids used to say roller. You'd be like, oh, she's a roller. And then but roller then gets replaced
like
by
that.
Thought. Yeah, roller was tight. Roller gets replaced by the word thought. Like we would call girls in high school, they'd be like, oh, that's a roller. But then that gets replaced by the word thought, and everybody starts using thought instead of roller. And so now everybody has the same slang terminology.
Yeah. It's the flattening of the human experience.
You flatten everything. Everybody's the same.
Which is what they want.
From a marketing perspective, it's much easier if your entire demographic that you have to sell advertising to has the same experiences, has the same slang terminology. You don't have to write a commercial for the Midwest and for the East Coast. You can write a commercial that you can run anywhere because everybody's the same.
Isn't that just fucking brutal?
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of a more
disheartening,
overtly fucking punch you in the dick. I can't think of it because really is the scary part about all this that we've talked about a bunch of times too is how quickly you can wash things out of normalcy in a generation or two. So like there isn't even really an opportunity to make a stand or fight back, because the people that would
you don't have a history anymore, so
are
how
gone
can you?
And the only people who will stand are the people who had parents that said to them, you know, hey, don't listen to this shit, and had some credibility and weren't complete losers that their kids would listen to them. So that's like, we're talking, that's a shrinking fucking minority, dude.
And here, not to bring everything back to the Disney Channel original movie, Luck of the Irish, but it's actually the theme of Luck of the Irish is like they're supposed to be having a cultural day, like, and you're supposed to talk about the culture that you come from. And this white kid's like, oh, what's my culture? And his parents keep going, oh, yeah, we're from Cleveland, because they don't want him to know that they're from Ohio or that they're from Ireland and not from Ohio. And so they keep saying, we're from Cleveland, we're from Cleveland. And that's exactly what we're talking about, is
that's so weird.
You forget what being Irish is. You forget you have no association with your past. Like if my grandmother wasn't from Ireland, I don't think I'd know anything about it. But like once you get three or four generations into this flattening, you've completely forgotten any heritage that you had. You know what I mean? You don't remember like if like my mom's from Louisiana, if she wasn't making like hot cross buns every Good Friday, nobody would fucking know anything about like the South. Like you lose the food, you lose the culture, you lose
it was so hard for me not to talk about your mom's hot cross buns there.
Don't talk about it. She listens to the podcast, Jake. Do not I'm talk about saying, my mom's dude. Hot cross buns.
You fucking firing me up. but
she makes delicious hot cross buns, all right?
No,
it's a delectable treat.
I know, it's fucked up. There's not really another way to put it. It can make, but once you have a kid, you realize that you can help. That's really the only way. It's like, it's kind of like that Jordan Peterson clean your room thing. It's like, you have to start as localized as possible and you can make a difference. But like a lot of these activists, I almost R-worded, a lot of these activist people, they...
A lot of these activist Vince Youngs.
Their life is in such chaotic disarray. How could they possibly affect any change in the world? They can't even fucking clean their room. Like, that's kind of like when you have a kid, that really becomes real, because it's like, oh, well, like, if this thing doesn't know how to read, that's 100% on me. So like, it gives you such good insight into like, okay.
Well, I mean, to go back to the flattening, I mean, this is what no one wants to talk about, but when you start to flatten it, what do you start to be able, what happens to like your culture is that you have all these kids who've grown up on the internet and they have no way to differentiate themselves. And like the number one thing that any human being wants to do is be an individual. And so if you have no culture because you don't know that you're Irish, and you have no heritage because you don't know that your parents are from the South, and if you have no slang terminology because everybody uses the same words, and if you have no like work experience because everybody also worked at Walmart just like your parents did and just like you did, now all of a sudden... The only thing that can be special about you is the thing you can't control, which is your sexuality and your gender. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, how do I be an individual? Well, guess what? I'm going to use they, them pronouns, and I'm going to tell everyone that I'm sexually attracted to fucking squirrels.
Well, why not? How did we move from that? How do we move away from like, the way you would get notoriety would be to be good at something.
Because that's too hard.
Yeah, but it works.
Yeah,
and it doesn't have to be hard. You could be the best fucking kid at Fortnite in your school. There's notoriety that comes with that. It's like,
yeah, but that would take hours of playing Fortnite, or you could in one day, in order to get the same attention, in order to get the same attention that would take you years of being good at like, say, baseball. I see. And being the number one outfielder recruited in your class, you could just go on and be like, you know what, guys?
Wow, I don't like that.
I actually like to have anal sex with fake anime figurines.
Wow, and, I don't like that.
And my name is River. My name's now River, and I'm asexual, mentally retarded chicken nugget. You know. Like, and then everyone's like, oh yeah, that's River, the asexual, mentally retarded chicken nugget. And people are like, everybody clap for, you know what I mean? Or them or whatever the fuck. And now all of a sudden you don't have to do any of that hard work.
But okay. So then the real fix needs to be the enabling, the clapping is what actually needs to be fixed, because people wouldn't pursue that if it wasn't
media.
People wouldn't pursue that if there was nothing to win.
Yeah, but as long as there's social media, there'll be something to win.
Which would just be what, like a comment that's like, you're so brave.
Yeah, it's 400 retweets. Yeah, you get 400 retweets and all of a sudden you're like a little bit internet famous for the day.
And
yeah,
and what's going on in the self? Like, what about self-respect and self-reflection and those things? Those things are just foregone.
Well, all of their self-respect is derived from whether or not people
from this
on the
identity
internet are giving them applause. Yeah.
Mm.
Their entire selfhood is based on how many retweets they can get.
This feels like just like a circular.
You ever go to the mall and you flick a quarter down one of those wells and it starts to like get faster and faster as it circles the drain before it falls in?
Are you saying that that's... That's our country.
Yeah. It starts spinning faster and faster and faster and faster as you go lower. I mean, I don't think it's our country. I think it's every country that's on social media.
No, because so like in China, social media is mitigated way differently. Like they have
Yeah, you're only allowed to do math on TikTok.
Yeah.
It's like,
here, or like engineering projects, or like sports, or like martial arts, or like, you know, listening to your parents.
Welcome to TikTok. You know, only people who listen to their parents are able to build the Yangtze River Dam.
The thing is, too, is like, and I think this is where we, where America, well, in the past anyway, now we may have reached a spot where it's too fucking like abstract and ridiculous. But like in the past, it would be like, if you social engineer too much, like in China or in Russia or whatever, what ends up happening is you flatten the experience, and then you get the same type of person over and over again.
Yeah.
Whereas if the experience is very variable,
well, in China, it's pretty easy to get the same type of person over and over again.
Okay.
They have this natural camouflage called being Chinese.
That's ruthless.
Folks, that's a joke I would have made in 2005. All right, I was just putting on the old Wayback Machine hat. All right,
but that's
I would
the thing,
never
though.
Make
it's
that
like,
joke now.
That's the thing. It's like if that's the case, you don't get David Bowie. You don't get Tupac. You just get, you know, you get
well,
the same guy.
You definitely are never going to get a Tupac in China because they do not like Vince Young over there.
Yeah, that's the thing that pisses me off the most, I think, about our racial stance in America. It's like everywhere else is so blatantly racist.
Yeah.
Like Poland is straight up right now. Like, I don't know if you've seen what they've been doing, but they've straight up put their foot in the sand and have been like, yeah, no one's allowed to come here if you're not white, pretty much. It's fucking crazy. Yeah. Yeah. And then they're like, but look, we have the lowest crime. So look at that.
It's pretty easy to have the lowest crime if anytime somebody shoplifts, you shoot them in the head.
If Jan Blachowicz just comes out of the woods and clobbers the fuck out of them. Yeah.
If you're just beheading people for like fucking, you know, filling up at the gas tank too long. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure you're going to have the lowest crime. It's not necessarily a good measure of a healthy society.
Also, it's like always 11 degrees, so everyone's just inside. Like,
yeah.
No one even goes outside or anything. Like,
yeah. And then they do their like reporting on like the happiness metric, and they're like, "We are the happiest country." And then like there's like one guy is like, "I'm not that happy," and they just fucking execute him like right in front of everyone. And they're
how
like,
do you think
"See
that's
how
measured?
Happy?"
How do you think that? How do you think a happiness matrix is measured? And also like, why are you measuring happiness?
Yeah, I think if you're in any place other than America, that's like. Okay, I'm sure that there's some Western liberal democracies in Europe that are a little bit more free.
We were in the West Coast. We're on the West Coast of Ireland. Everyone seems jazzed up to be there.
I have such a different experience with the Irish people. I know that you really liked them, but I'll say it right now. I fucking hated those little rats. I have never met a group of people that deserve to be oppressed as much as the Irish people deserve to be oppressed. I mean, well, they are rats, dude.
They can't even
look you in the eye.
They have two. There's two different kinds of them. That's the thing.
Okay.
There's like a forward, confident Irish, and then there's a meek, field hand Irish. And
I was meeting a lot of peasants. I met very few Viking remnants. I met mostly field peasants.
Yeah, which is nothing wrong with that.
You remember when we fought those two field peasants at the castle?
Of course.
Jake and I were fucking drinking like all night the night before he gets married, and we're in a castle, and this little Irish bartender looked at my ears and he goes, "Oh, where'd you get those ears from? What's going on there? You think you fancy yourself a bit of a fighter, or do you?"
He called himself like a quadruple black belt or something.
He was like, "I'll tell you right now, I'm a quadruple black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I could take you down right now." And I was like, "Yeah, dude, but you're doing Irish jiu-jitsu. We'll fuck you up." And he was
I said to him, "Look at your ass."
"You got no ass, pal." "Yeah, where's
the
power coming
from?" And he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Dude, look at your ass. There's, I don't care what you know. That's not going to help.
Yeah. So he took us up to the top of the castle.
Yeah, he liked it.
Yeah, he was like, okay, let's go to the top of the castle. I'll have a little wrestling match with you little lads. And I mean, by the way, he's calling us little. He was like 5'5".
Not a big guy.
160 pounds. And Jake and I just took turns beating the fuck out of this guy. That's fucking insane, dude. He kept trying to wrestle. Jake at one point got him in full mount and was about to just start raining punches down on him. And I had to be like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Even when we were on the feet, I was fainting like I was going to hit him in the face.
Yeah, he didn't like
and
that.
And I wanted to. Yeah, I wanted
he didn't
to.
Like that.
And then my favorite part about that is after we, I think you tussled with him and then I tussled with him and his friend just watched, by the way, and his friend talked shit to him the whole time. His friend was like, these kids are kicking your ass, man. Yeah. It's hilarious. And then literally like as soon as the second round of the tussling is over, by the time I could stand up and turn around, they had stormed off and left us on the tower all pissed off.
They were so mad, dude. Because we were shark tanking him. Every time you would get him in mount and he would tap, I would immediately jump in and just fucking pass his guard and start getting knee on belly.
He was having such
a bad time.
Yeah. It pissed me off that like... you have this gay thing about you where you have so much respect for martial arts that you like forget that you lifted weights for literally 21 years and played a game of violence with other very large people and did it at a high level, and then someone tells you that they like know Wong Chi, and you're like, oh my god, sir, yes. I could never possibly understand how violent you can be. And it's like,
I just gave him a chance. I wanted to see what he had.
You just have this all this reverence for it. And then in my mind, the first thing I think is you're going to have to show me some Fido, okay? Because
that's why we took him to the roof. I was like,
I had to win against fucking Lamar Miller in open field, and
you, sir, are no Lamar Miller.
You have the ass of a small woman. So how are we...
Who in the hell is Lamar Miller? I don't even know who you're talking about.
You better have some magic.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is.
That was very fun when he started getting going and he was like, hey, I'm going to teach you things, you lads, a boy or two. And I just immediately fucking like put him in side control and just started like covering his mouth with my hand. I was just like being mean to him. Just like
put him in
old
a can
school
opener.
Bullying. Yeah, just old school bullying tactics. I was neck cranking him for no reason.
trying to cave in his sternum with his own chin.
Fucking idiot.
Yeah,
shut up, bitch.
But I think like most, well, that's the thing too. We're not most Americans, but like there is a type of, that's the thing too. Like, I think we had the wrong type. There's types of Irish guys that are much, I don't know. It's there. Maybe there's less. It's because no one in Europe squats.
I'm telling you, dude, I know you don't want to say it, but they're a group of people that deserve to be ruled. You know, all of
they
Europe
fought back, though. They weren't.
The people who fought back came here. Okay. all the people that fought back are in this country. From sea to shining sea, it's all of the people in Europe that ever fought back. And all of the people that stayed in Europe were the guys who looked at the boat and were like, I'm just going to stay here. I actually kind of like being ruled. I think being ruled is kind of nice. Sometimes they give us food on Sundays. And all of the people that landed in America were like, fuck getting food on Sundays. I'm getting in the boat. These guys are fucking pussies.
Yeah, but the IRA is basically them taking the island back.
I'll tell you right now, the IRA was mostly sponsored by Americans.
Yeah, it's literally the Kennedy family being like...
Yeah, nobody wants to say it, but there's a lot of Americans going back to Ireland and fighting over there.
It is wild how, like... the history of the Irish and the Italian mobs.
In America. The Italians also. They just let Mussolini take over, and then the Italian mob in America was like, yeah, can you guys pretend to arrest us and send us back to Sicily so that we can go over there and fucking kick some goddamn ass?
I feel like they I mean, it's weird how, okay, so what they come in here and set up, especially the Italians, like where they're extorting businesses and they're, you know, they have a monopoly on force and whatever you want to call it.
Call it a government.
That's what I was going to say. It's literally like the U.S. federal government observed the mobs in 50s, 60s, and 70s. And they were like,
hey, that's our job.
Kill all of them and do that better.
Yeah. No, they looked at the mafia and were like, hey, that's what we do.
Yeah.
You guys can't do the exact same thing we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the CIA went to Meyer Lansky. I mean, he's Jewish, but then they went to like Bugsy Siegel and what's the fucking one famous guy? I think it's Sammy the Bull. Sammy the Bull. He's too young. But they went to Lucky Luciano. That's who it was. They went to them and they were like, hey, we're afraid communists are going to take over Italy. And all the Italians were like, well, fucking send us over there. I'll show you what's going on. I fucking give them a little piece of our mother's sauce. You fucking think you're going to be over here? Everybody's the same. Fuck you. And they sent all of the mafia guys in New York City. They fake arrested them and then deported them back to Sicily and just started funding the shit out of them. And so, like, the entire anti-communist movement starts in Sicily from American mafia members who just start killing communists, like, everywhere in Italy.
We did shit like that all the time. Dude, I wanted to tell you about this. Okay, so
CIA is kind of cool. I know.
We haven't talked about this.
All right, okay. I have 5 minutes.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so I'll be quick. Bob Dole. What do you know about him?
Is Bob Dole the guy who couldn't lift his arms?
No, that's fucking the guy who ran against Obama.
No, not John McCain. There's another guy. I think it's Bob Dole. All right, keep going.
Bob Dole is the guy who did Dole Fruits. He is the Dole Fruit Company guy.
That is not Bob Dole. All right.
Yes, it is.
No, Dole Fruits is not Bob Dole.
Yes, it is.
All right, keep going.
Okay. So at the time, we're getting a ton of fruit in the U.S. This is like, you know, 50s, 40s. We're getting a lot of fruit in the U.S. out of Nicaragua, right? Uh-huh. And then Nicaragua goes through a leadership change, and the guy says, fuck exporting things. We're going to become self-sufficient, and we're not going to import or export anything. We're going to become a free Nicaragua of the people. Right. And they stop exporting fruit to Bob Dole, and Bob Dole's making money hand over fist. So Bob Dole says, what the fuck? You're going to let this fly? He goes to the president at the time and goes, hey, get this guy out of here. He's fucking up my business. What's the deal? President goes, you know, we can't overthrow a government because you want fruit, you know? And Bob Dole goes, no, that's not going to go down like this. So he literally conscripts an army himself.
Yeah.
They load him in the same ships that he used to ferry back and forth into the Gulf of Mexico to bring the fruit back and forth. He loads it with dudes with guns. Yep. He pops off, kills all the resistance. Overthrows the government. This is just a guy. This is a dude who runs a business. This isn't the government.
And he hired Freud's nephew, Edward Bernanke, because people were upset about it in America. And Edward Bernanke, who was Freud's nephew, started running commercials about how they needed to do this in Nicaragua and how Nicaragua was stealing our fruit product. And people started writing their senator to be like, let Bob Dole go down. His name's not Bob Dole, but yes, it is the Dole fruit guy. To be like, let them go down and take the country.
No, his name was Robert Dole. Bob Dole.
Oh, okay. Okay. I think it's a different Bob Dole, but keep going. Yeah. So, it is the same guy.
Okay, so this is the most fucked up part, okay? He overthrows the government. All this shit happens. Then, while he's down there, he doesn't just run back home with his tail between his legs. He goes, all right, we're going to set up a little quick election here. And these are the candidates. But if you don't vote for this guy, we're going to kill everyone. So they put a guy in power that Dole selects. Okay. And then Dole goes, hey, sorry about what I did down there. But all you got to do, just tax all the people and rebuild everything I fucked up. And then I also want you to build me a better port of entry for my company. So he goes down there with a bunch of dudes. He basically got like 10 high school football teams together and gave them fucking Tommy guns. And then goes down there, overthrows the government. Okay. And then installs his own government that's impartial to his fruit business. And then goes back home and eventually runs for the Senate and wins the Senate. No one says anything about it. Like,
this is a different guy. All right. There's two different Doles, but all right. It doesn't matter because at the end of the day, what we're talking about is that this is a time back when Americans were still allowed to be Americans, when you could just get some of your buddies together and overthrow
a government
country. Yeah.
And then not only overthrow it, install your own. That's where Banana Republic comes from.
Yeah. No, 100%. You could back in the 30s, you could just get a bunch of your buddies together and just go rule Bolivia.
you imagine that? You're like a bunch of like a high school graduating class, and Robert Dole's like waiting at right after they go throw their fucking hats for graduating from wherever high school. And he's just got a truck full of grenades and pistols.
Yeah. And he's like,
and
what
you walk
you,
out.
What do like, you want to do?
You got a job lined up? And the kid's like, no, I don't really know. I might go work for my dad's construction. He's like, you ever heard of Nicaragua? And the kid's like, no. And he's like, well, here's the deal. I'll give you 6 grenades and you can go throw them at people in Nicaragua. You ever thrown a grenade, kid?
Yeah.
And the kid's like, no, what's a grenade?
Robert Louis Stevenson book. He's just like, yeah, we could just go rule. You could basically be a pirate. Back in the 30s, you could still be a pirate.
And to think, right, that the guy doesn't even have the decency to like ride off into the sunset after that. He's like, no, I'm going to run for Senate.
Yeah. And now, and you know what's fucked up is that now when you graduate high school, the only way you get to do something cool is by editing your Twitter bio to say that you no longer go by she, her pronouns. Like, that's the closest you can come to being a pirate. is to be like, I'm a they, them. That sucks, dude. You used to be able to just overthrow the fucking Chilean government on your fucking, on your gap year. Like, between high school and college, you could go down and literally attack a small Central American country.
The part about it that like I couldn't understand was that there was just no procedure, infrastructure, anything in place for him to ask permission It was just like, I want to do this, I'm gonna go do it. And it wasn't like getting a gym membership. Like, he said, I want to take over this country, I'm gonna do it. And this is like post World War II.
It was electricity
and stuff. Like,
it was like that picture we were looking at in Iowa, where it's because back then, like, most of the country was like dirt roads and barbed wire fences and just fields. And so like there was very little central authority back then. You could still be an American, and being an American meant that you could put a bunch of your friends into a truck, drive into Mexico, and like take over Tijuana for like 3 months and that's just be like, this is our, this is my city now.
Yeah. Like if you kept things quiet, you know, how would anyone know?
Yeah, no, I know. No one knew. If you, like, if you were Mormon in Utah and your last name was Romney, you would get a bunch of your cousin wives together and you'd say, you know what? The central government no longer wants me to marry you, but I love all you little ladies so much that we're going to go down to Mexico and overthrow the local authorities so that I can keep having sex with the hundreds of cousins that I have.
It's disgusting. Who's, yeah. who's
and that right guy also Truman? Almost became, that guy almost became president as well.
Who's right after Truman?
Eisenhower.
Is he?
Yeah.
And he's in there the longest, right? He has that crazy run.
No, that's FDR. Eisenhower FDR. Was 8 years.
So then, wait, so we go, FDR, no, Truman, we go Roosevelt,
Eisenhower,
then we Kennedy, go Eisenhower, then we go JFK. So
LBJ, Nixon, Ford.
So, Parker. So Eisenhower and Eisenhower is probably the president. Maybe Truman's the president. I bet Nicaragua is taken over, new guy installed, and we're on the way back to fucking Texas with a boat full of fruit before he even hears about it.
He's riding on the front of the truck just like, guess who's got bananas again, you sons of bitches?
Yeah.
And people in town are like, "Woo!
Yeah,
I fucking love bananas."
And then by the time Eisenhower or Kennedy hears about it, they just kind of got to be like, well, I guess the goose is kind of already cooked there. No, I mean,
they're just sitting there like, are they communists? Not anymore.
Yeah.
All right. Good job.
And you're telling me this guy got the fruit back up and running? Yeah. They're like, well, fucking bring him in here.
Yeah. He just walks in with like a banana cream pie and he's like, guess what you're going to have tonight?
Let's
banana
put a medal pie on this guy.
Yeah. Eisenhower's like, sitting there like, God, my wife loves banana cream pie. Thank you.
This should be a segment of our show. Is we should just go find the Robert Doles of American history and tell the country and our listeners how we've
the
gone
real
from
history
that,
of America.
How we've gone from that to Foxkin in 75 years.
Unless it's 75 years, you went from being able to be a genuine privateer army to Foxkin.
Yeah.
In the span of one lifetime.
Yeah. That's kind of, and honestly, when I say segment, I mean, that's just kind of the ethos of this show. So.
Yeah. I mean, that is actually the entire podcast is how did we go from privateer armies to Foxkin? I mean, that sucks. All right. I have to go back to work. This has been great.
So all right.
We'll see you guys.
Peace, everybody. Have a nice day.